short on oil money. Even now we need to integrate PMA, establish an operational, develop an overarching strategy to defend, protect, secure, and ensure well-managed borders. And then there's one identity of all persons in South Africa known and secured. We need to ensure that registration at birth is the only entry point for South Africa to the new national identity system. And as NIS designed and operational, ensure that systems are in place to enable the capturing of biometric data of all travelers who enter or exit SA legally. And then need to improve and streamline regulations to reduce the burden of importing core and critical skills needed for the economy. Changes to immigration policy and legislation that supports the importation of economically important skills. So, as I'm saying, this is over a period of 5 years. It's not only in this year. So some won't report it now because they're not in this current year. They will be coming in the following year. Well, even this one is known in terms of what is our outcomes, what is our strategic objectives. I'm not going to repeat those for outcome 1, 2, 3. And then wanted to start much on the progress against these objectives for the quarter now, January to March 2015. Live capture was rolled out now to 27 additional offices, enabling the issue of smart cards. Technical testing of the key aspects of the e-permit system was done, is still under development. The vacancy rate has been maintained below the 10% rate. Training programs were delivered, impact assessment carried out, 225 vetting field investigations finalized, exceeding the target of 117. 189,543 vets were registered within 30 days. And then 1,053 IDs were dispatched to the refugee reception offices. And then checked, though it was in the previous quarter, but it will be linking with what we'll be reporting now in this quarter, is that Cabinet did note the institutional operations analysis report on the BMA and approved the vision of the BMA, but I'll be reporting where we are now. Improvements at the triples of entry were completed over the period under the review, and the 87.4% of business, critical skills and general work visas were finalized within 8 weeks turnaround time, and all 14 communications planned targets for the quarter under the review were achieved. That is at a high level. Now, there are still challenges facing the department. A major challenge is that the service delivered continues to be disrupted by unreliable networks and power supplies. That is a major issue which we are still sitting with. And in this regard, we did approach the Ministry of Telecommunication to say we wanted as a department to be moved from CETA because CETA is not able to help us on the issue of networks. So we've been engaging them, they have not yet responded, but it's something which is a major, major problem for us, this issue of the networks, in particular that we are automated. If the networks are down, people can't get our services anymore because it's not filling a paper and leave it there. It is automated. So that's why this is a major issue for us. And the issue of power supply was a big problem. So it hit us very much in the month of October, November, December. But the results of that, you pick it now in the following quarter, which we had. Yes, not all our offices have got generators. The only ones which they have is only these ones which we have automated, and they will have a generator. But this is only 140 offices out of 407. So if now there is a load shedding, then that office is closed. It cannot operate. So that's what has caused a problem for us. As the new systems are being developed, there are inevitable problems of transition from legacy system, some of which must continue to operate for a period. the biggest challenge is to move as fast as possible to replace the green IT book. What this point means is that in the same office chair which is automated, some products are still manual, like your birth, death, marriage, and that you still do it on a manual process, whereas now your ID and the passport is automated. So in the same office, you don't have a fully automated office, whereas the other office completely, they are still on a manual basis. And with the offices which we have, that's why we already reported to the committee that we, as the president announced, that we are working on the internet with the banks, because with the pace which we are, based on the number of offices we have, it's still going to take us time to replace all the green IT books. And the major challenge is that we estimated that we've got about 38 million people who already have an IT book, which we need to change them. But the other issue is the one now to say, but per annum, you've got about 1 million kids who now get to age of 16. But if now they're not in an area where you've got a smart card office, it means now they are adding on that 38 million which we have. There's still a need for managers to improve their operational management skills and establish operations management committee. The National Operations Management Committee has been established and the training has commenced in this regard. So we're saying, as a Department of Home Affairs, is what we are trying to say, people must realize that at the end we are issuing products. So it means now we need to have a proper operations management so that people are able to understand how that product starts from the beginning up to the end. So for this, as we said now, then we have established this operations management committee to help us to deal with that in the various offices. Then the other challenge which we have is that our fleet for mobile units is aging, and this replacement requires additional funding and creative solutions. So as they stand, they are really old now. They are at a range of about 7 to 8, 10 years, a lot of those mobile units, but still in the old model. They can only issue the unabridged birth certificate and the old passport and all that, but they are not equipped for the new system which we have, so that now in the next year, we are working now on the mobile solution for the smart card and the passport. But these mobile units are really aging. And yes, we're from National Treasury, we did submit our bid for the MTF. However, as government departments were told that now for 16-17, there is no funding, the possibility of funding within the 17-18 and 18-19, that's what we're told during the but yeah, we did submit. So it is still a challenge at the access to some farm areas, which gives us a problem with regard to this efforts of the registration of birth. And we are still pushing ahead with our process of really stopping the issue of registration of birth by 2015. But when we say stopping, we mean that at a normal process, it will have now to go through a rigorous problem. And why this thing, we still push it, even with the challenges now we are also having, of we're saying parents must have an unabridged birth certificate for them to travel. It supports what we're talking about and say in any event, a child should have been registered within 30 days. So that would not be an issue, but it's because people are still not complying with that. So it's something which we still need to push ahead about, because we believe that once we are able to get people registering their kids within 30 days, then that will have a better, clean, and an accurate national population register. Well, Chair, as we said that, yes, we're here for the fourth quarter. But what we are saying is that now in this quarter we have managed now to achieve 71% of the targets which were set for the quarter four, but the other quarters were already reported on them. In terms of the summary, we're saying that 43 targets, of which 33 have been achieved, and then 10 not achieved give us the 29% of not achieved, but I will come into what are those targets and what are the reasons for that. So in terms of what are the strategic objectives that are known, I don't want to waste time. I want to just go straight to what now we have achieved and not at, but taking more time on what has not been achieved. Our target was 70 offices, and then in this quarter, our target was 10 offices, and then we achieved them. But what was done was 27, because we remember that in the last quarter, we did not do well on this target. So now we're able to do all those 27 offices, so that target is being achieved for the quarter. And then now, with the national identity system, that's why you will see, Chair, that what we have not achieved is more or less consistent, because it is around 30%. It's because of this, it's one of the things which has not been achieved for the whole year. It's the issue of the procurement of this NIS, because we wanted to follow a particular process, but for us to do this, we had to get some deviations from the National Treasury. So this matter is not yet concluded up to the end of the year, started from April. So those two targets are related to that. So we're not able to achieve that. Well, that thing is not yet closed. But the minister has been talking to the Minister of Finance in this regard. And then as well, the trusted traveler is linked as well with that target. So those three targets have not been achieved throughout the year because of that issue. And then with we wanted to develop an e-permitting system, which will be piloted within the IMS branch. So the adjudication system was developed and implemented. And now when we talk about what we have achieved around the adjudication now of the permits, is because of that system now, which is working through the VFS. Well, VFS is the front end, and then at the back end, we needed now to have a system now to deal with those permits. And then now with the training of the officials, so we'll be able now that all they've been appointed on the fixed term contract, we've managed to train 100% of them. And then as well as the officials, 75 trained and impartial conducted, including definition of baseline, that was done. We managed to train all those in the quarter. And then in terms of impact assessment conducted, including the definition of achieved, so even that we did now advancement management program, emerging management development program, and leading innovation in the public service. And then in-year monitoring reports submitted to National Treasury on a monthly basis, we're able to do that every quarter. And then our quarterly performance report verified and approved by ESCO and signed by the DG within 60 days of each quarter, we're able to do that. So we're able to submit it every quarter and follow the right process. And then now training as per rollout plan, a report on ethics program implemented and submitted to Minister for consideration. We give the number of the officials who have been trained on that. And then now maintaining the vacancy rate at below 10%, we said the rate was 6.9% in this quarter. As we now, as a result of them, that, there was an increase due to the natural attrition and funding of more of 154 additional posts. So we did receive a funding from National Treasury for Inspectorate. That's why now we have got 154 positions, which now we needed to fill. And then in terms of the disciplinary cases, we had to finalize 60% of reported cases within 90 days. were able now to achieve that, and also went through one review on processes conducted and report signed off. The report was finalized in terms of one of the major issues we always faced at the management of conflict of interest in VHASMS members. So we had to look at that and see what other processes we can put in place in order to improve on this matter. And Chair, we had to look, our target was to look at the threats and risk assessment conducted in accordance with the requirements of the MIS. That was achieved as we did 14, and the return reports were done and then submitted with its recommendations. Then in terms of the vetting, Chair, we are not doing the vetting as a department, but what is our responsibility is to do the field work investigations and then refer it to the SSA. So 225 vetting field work were submitted to SSA. Then in terms of the communication, the target of the communication strategy and action plan developed and implemented in respect of external and internal. So all 14 communication plan targets for the court under the review were achieved. And then in terms of the imbizos in the last quarter, we had a target of 3, but we managed to do 1 imbizo, which was conducted here in Mossel Bay at Kwanongaba here in the Western Cape. So the others were not able to do them. Then in terms of civics affairs, our target is to register 180 children within 30 days. And 189,543 beds were registered within 30 days during the period under review. And then in terms of the smart cards, our target was 640,000 smart cards were a target of the quarter. And then in the quarter, we managed to do 577,407 ID smart cards. And Chair, here one of the issues as we said is that is this issue of the networks, but we are also really looking at those who've got a target now, which is what is good with electronic or automated process, because now we know that per each computer we're expecting about 28 cards per day in that one computer, so we're able to know what is the target per each employee. So it's something which we are really looking at. So that's why again we were hard hit, as I've said, with regard to this issue of the supplier of power, is that we had a target that 95% of ID's first issue must be done within 54 days of applications. But we could not achieve this. It was only 64.5%. And the reason was that at BVR, we had a problem where the power hit our system there completely, and then now we're operating on a DR site. And the DR site is not able to do all. It only takes 13 the application, and others is not able to deal with them, and then it took a lot of time, and then so our PVR was completely down, and then DPW had to install new generators and all that. So the problem now is being addressed in this regard. And then the 95% of machine readable passports was not achieved. We achieved 94.1%. So though they were affected both, but it was a little better with the passport than the ID documents. And so we're able to achieve about 94.1% of that. And then again, with the manual passport as well issued within 24 days, even that one was not achieved. We managed to achieve 87.9%. And then in terms of you know, the ones of the live capture, we're able now to achieve the 87.4%, but we did not achieve the target, which was 97%. Then, Chair, we had to come up with this front office toolkit so that people in the offices, they understand how we want them, that if you are opening the office in the morning, they must know what they're supposed to be doing, and then so that now in the entire department you can have one processes of doing things, so that the toolkit was done and implemented, and then people were trained, and then a circular was also signed to all the offices. Then in terms of immigration affairs, we have to issue 50% of refugee IDs issued within 90 days, and then we're able to achieve this target, as we managed to issue 60% of the IDs. And then with the passports, 80% of refugee covered documents issued within 90 days, it was not achieved. We only achieved 66.3% of that. So this one now of the refugee was still following more a manual process where they go to the refugee center and still goes to CVs and then go back to the offices. But we're looking at automating this process in the next financial year. And then, Chair, with regard to the BMA, the bill has been approved. The draft bill was approved by the minister after the December 2014 cabinet, and now it is on circulation now with the public. It will be coming to Parliament by October. And then two ports of entry were improved in regard to the office accommodation, and so that has been achieved, as we did the three ports of entry completed in terms of the Redfontein, and then some work at the Big Bridge, and as well as at Oshoek. And then in terms of a border survey of the borderline communities, our target was that the data would be analyzed and reports submitted to the minister. That was achieved because we analyzed that in the third quarter, and the report with the recommendations in the movement area was submitted to minister for consideration. And what that report helping us to do, as we are busy with the immigration policy, so to do that in order to inform the white paper which we are busy now developing. And then there was a refined immigration policy, a discussion paper submitted to minister. Yes, that paper was done, and it was developed and submitted to minister. And in this regard, we had two round tables during the year. And then now, even in this year, we had a colloquium to take this process. So our target for next year is to come up with a green paper, so we're able now to do that. So that is in progress. So. And so with the permanent residence, so you recall that we said this issue of the permanent residence is something which we really have been reporting about it, to say, yes, it's a target which we know we're not achieving, but we really wanted to put much attention on this issue of the permanent residence. So we did not give much on it. Yes, there were other issues with the VFS, but we also took a conscious decision to really investigate the issues of permanent residence thoroughly. And then in the next year, we even changed this target to say we must look at all the permanent residences. No, the one which you can look at it as a target are those which are relating to people with the critical skills. But those now of the relatives, permits, and all that, we need to take, because that's where issues of marriage of convenience comes through, because in the current form is that a permanent resident is a process where you graduate. As long as you're in the country for 5 years, then thereafter you are due to get your permanent residence. And people know that the route of going there is to get into these issues of fraudulent identity and as well as convenience. So we have to take a very thorough thing on this matter. But with the one year which we really put attention on is the issue now of the temporary residence permits with regard to business, critical skills, general work permits adjudicated within 8 weeks. Then that's now we're at about 87.4% of our issuing within 8 weeks of those. So we've achieved that target. So at this point now, I will be handing over now to the CFO to deal now with the financial side of things, and then we will come back. Thank you, come and sit here.
Thank you, DJ. Chairperson, thank you. Please, the financial performance at the end of quarter four, these figures are the figures after Vironment and the figures presented for auditing. If you can, on this particular slide, slide number 42, it shows that the department in a sense spent its full allocation. We spent 100% of the budget. What was left remaining was 347,000 rands. That's the amount we intend to surrender to National Treasury. Of that 347, 284,000 rands was for DHA modernization. Those are earmarked funds, Chair, and she can only use those funds in accordance with the specifications. So we couldn't spend the 284,000 and then the 90,000 under the other programs. We have the details on the next slide, for slide 43, as to where that money lies. You will notice, Chair, that in most economic classifications, we spend the full allocation, with the exception of goods and services, where the 284,000 rand lies. We spend our full allocation on compensation of employees. We had 1,000 rands left. On buildings and infrastructure, we had nothing left. Machinery equipment, we had 63,000 rands left. So in essence, we spent all our full allocation. The next slide also gives the, this is slide 44, gives the spending as per the sub-programs. For each of these, you'll notice, Chair, that's all, but this is after environment, as I've explained. The transversal IT projects, that's the only one where the 284,000 rand, where the bulk of the saving is left. Under slide 45, on the sub-programs, citizen affairs, there's a 19,000 to be rounded up, Chair, it becomes 20,000, and that gives you the 20,000 of the previous slide. Again, there are insignificant savings on all the sub-programs on citizen affairs. In overall, it's 20,000 rands. On immigration services, it's 50,000 rands, Chair, the breakdown of these savings on this particular program is also given there. Boards and committees, that's basically the only one there was anything 36,000 rands, but as I said, this was also done, this was cleared after the environment process. On the provinces spent very well, spent their full allocation, 20,000 rands left, Chair, and basically Gauteng. On revenue collection, that's slide 48, Chair, we collected 762 million rands. In that amount is an amount of nearly 90 mil relating to foreign revenue, which we collected, which was collected our foreign missions. I think this is the end of the presentation from our side. DG?
Saying you're very quick.
I'm sorry.
The less you speak, the less problems you have.
Thanks, sir. Let me try that as well and see if I can win. So we would just say, now, what will be the major issues for the department going forward? Is still at the issue of the effective management of immigration to contribute to security and development. And this will include the issues of public discussion on the immigration and leading the establishment of a border management agency. And we still need to tackle this matter of coming up with a national identity system, though we still face this challenge of us how to procure it. Because the major problem on this matter is that in terms of the current PFMA says to us, we must go up on an open tender. But it's a problem for us thinking about the security of your national population identity system, and you go to a pub. That's what we're negotiating with National Treasury to say, yes, we understand what the prescript says, but what is facing us is very problematic to go and say we will take all our information of the citizens and we put it to public advocacy. So that's where this thing is really a stuck for us. And as I said, that we are still committed in the issue of really end this issue of delayed registration of birth with all the challenges it brings. And want to still continue with modernizing home affairs in through investing in people, processes, and technology. So we're talking about this thing in the department. We say we still believe that the Department of Home Affairs is not adequately funded. If, Chair, you can just compare the departments, which I can say were in the same league. If you take the staff of police is over 200,000 employees, which, Chair, we still say they deal with a certain segment of the population. Department of Justice also is in a range of about, that's a high number of staff. The one I know is Correctional Services, which is more or less 100,000, which they deal also with a segment of the population. But now you come to the Department of Home Affairs, which deals with everyone for 24 hours. We are only at 10,000 people. It is really problematic. And even if you go to the budget comparison of those departments, you can see just our budget as a Department of Home Affairs over the past 5 years has been growing at a rate of about 2.2%. But if you go to these other departments which are on the same cluster, their budgets, I mean, you can't compare budget of Correctional Services and Home Affairs and Justice. But that's what Chair was saying. We still need to continue with this. That's what we're doing when we submit in the bids. And we still want to improve the service delivery, because once we do that, it will promote good governance in the administration. Yes, we still have to work hard on the issue of developing officials that are ethical and patriotic and professional. As we said, that you can't get the services of Home Affairs anywhere. If you are not happy, you still have to come back to the Department of Home Affairs. Hence, we need to make sure that we deal with this matter. And really, we want to continue to fight the issues of corruption in the department. As we said, that some of the people who are coming for our services, the vulnerable groups, they can't go anywhere. And then if now we let people to take the advantage of that, hence we deal with them. If we pick you up, and then we will arrest and all that. Well, we're still saying that the issue of the unreliability of the networks, as I've said, is still really, really a major issue for us. As we said, that we did approach the Minister of Home Affairs and said, yes, we understand CETA was established by government to provide the IT services to government, but where we are really, really dependent on networks, nothing else. And as we move now to have this relationship with the banks, and they both want to expand our footprint, but not on a paper process. So we really need to deal with this matter. So our proposal was to say that Telkom is there as a government, is a major shareholder, and they own about 98% of networks in the country. Why can't we go to them? But as I was saying, that we're still waiting for that. And with that, we need to really increase our IT specialists. If you go to a province, you'll find that a province will have what we call a RITO. Maybe other provinces got two or three RITOs to service not only the offices with a modernized system, but even your land ports are dependent on that and other offices, because whether they're not fully automated, but they still have some IT. Even in this regard, we did submit a bid to Treasury and we're comparing just ourselves with SARS. SARS, we know that they've got about 800 people who are looking after their IT as SARS, but Home Affairs has got 60 people, including secretaries, and the total complement of IT is about 60 people in the department. And it still remains a chance that if we don't capacitate our immigration unit, we are always in record to say Home Affairs has got about 800. Yes, they give us about additional 154 posts, so it means now by this year we'll be about, standard will be reaching a 1,000 inspectorate or immigration officers throughout the country. But that is not only that. Share systems with the issues which we are still dealing with it now, even for immigration regulations which we implemented. Some of the issues which we face there is because of the lack of systems which we have. So it's something which we put a bid for it and say we need to really improve the systems of the department and then increase the capacity in order for us. In fact, in the countries now, I think DECON now is represented to about 123 countries abroad, but Home Affairs in those missions were only at about now 36 missions where we are represented abroad. So the bulk of the missions were also dependent now on DECON than in Home Affairs, which causes some of these problems, because yes, we do train at DECON staff before they go abroad, but that is not their core business. So they might go and say things which is not what we want. So it's something which we are, here we've put funding for it. In fact, there's also an interministerial committee on migration which was established because of those issues of attacks. So if you look at the responsibilities of the Department of Home Affairs in that committee are very huge. And without funding, then is a problem. As we said to Treasure, that yes, there is a saying that prevention is better than cure, and as a Department of Home Affairs, we're on the prevention space, but how things are funded is saying cure is better than prevention, because if now there is a problem of xenophobic attacks, yes, Project Fiela will be funded, but it's dealing with the outcome of not funding the prevention. So that's why we are sitting and said that is a problem for the department. So we are saying now, well, we accept as well as the department that yes, well, the Department of Home Affairs has never been recognized as one of the key security architects of the country. So we were looked at more as an administrative department, which is just issuing passport and IDs, whereas it is not the case. So that's what we are trying to say now. We need to look at this, how we can deal with this issue. So, Chair, as we said that, hence now we are also, because of this, we are looking at other channels. What can we use in order for us to provide the services to people, but it comes with certain challenges within that. So, Chair, with that, that is our report, Chair, of the last quarter. Thanks very much, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Gigi, and we have received the report. Because it's the fourth quarter report, that means it's a report that is closing to the annual report. I think then the annual report then is going to talk to all the four quarters, and then holistically. And we are going to interchange that, I think, through the BRR report. And then, so we're still going to fight. That fight is still coming. Yes, and then... I think Mabuso must start attending a gym so that he can come and fight for you on that score. DG, the issue of inspectorate. Inspectorate, as you have correctly indicated, that the services that Home Affairs is giving to people. People don't have options. You are monopolizing in giving the ID documents. Giving the passport, you are monopolizing. And therefore, it is very important that you really have ethical officers and professional officers so that people are not aggrieved because they have no choice. And then our officials then must choose to give service correctly and properly, because the customers can't do so. And then the issue of the foreign revenue, I think it has not been explained a little bit deeper. You will know that we had endless problems about it. I think you even went to SCOPA and then to go and explain yourselves, and then there were some agreements, and then I think we just need a little bit of an explanation on that one. Is how far are you in clearing that so that it doesn't pose a challenge in the next audit as well? And then there was an issue of an office that has been closed in PE, and then you are so quiet about it. And then whether there is anything that has been done since that has actually happened. And of course is that Honorable Nkomo has been very vociferous about these marriages of convenience, people acquiring our permanent residence permits by hook and crook. As you have already indicated, is it possible just to expand on it a little bit? Honorable members, I think you heard the report, and then I've got Honorable Hussein, and then Maxson. Then I think I should just do myself a service by just starting right at the end in a line. You can start, Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. Let me start by saying thank you very much to the DG and the rest of the departmental officials who are present, and say thank you for the good work that you do, and you try very hard to make things happen in Home Affairs. I understand under sometimes some very trying circumstances, so it would be unfair for one to focus on only the problem areas and not give recognition for some of the progresses that are being made in some areas. So I want to first put that on the record. But on the same token, I'm sure you will understand that as being representatives of the people, our large responsibility is to try and help people, to make them understand what the problems are and engage with you on their behalf. And that's why the very first point I want to make, and I hope that you will spend significant time responding to it, because this has been a problem ever since I sat on this committee. And the issue is this. You know, I take you to your slide on page 4 where you've got a very nice circle there about professionalism, having integrity, being efficient, and people-centered and caring. Chair, I remain convinced to believe this DHA values. I really remain convinced. To start off with, just to get responses from correspondents, from senior officials in the Home Affairs Department, you know, you can even instead is easier. It's a nightmare. And Chair, I'm willing to even back this up with evidence, and I'll put piles of papers on the table to the point of where my staff have to often beg departmental officials to give us a response or even an acknowledgement of receipt. And I'm talking about from the lower management to middle management to senior management right up to the Director General's office itself. It is a massive problem. And you know, this is the cause of huge frustrations out there in the public. You battle to get answers through the toll-free home line, you battle to get answers from the departments. You can go all the way to the top. I'll put the evidence on the table, and I'll show you case by case by case. So, as far as I'm concerned, Chair, with great respect to the officials for all of the hard work that you do, you know, these little things that give people, that make them feel actually as if we're running a professional organization, that there are people on the other side of the telephone that can assist them, that actually genuinely shows that they care, makes a massive difference. People understand, you know, they have to wait in long queues, although it's frustrating. They understand. But if they get an answer and they get a response, it makes a world of difference. I'll give you just one example. Chair, there is a family in KZN whose father is stuck overseas, and for 2 years now, he cannot enter the country. And he's got a 3-year-old child and he's got a 7-year-old child. And the department refuses to allow him a visa, for reasons I don't know. But in an attempt to try and get an answer from the department, it's taking me now more than 3 weeks to just get an answer, to be able to give them some sort of feedback. And we're members of parliament, and you can't get the answers from the department. Can you imagine what it's like out there for the public? It is absolutely frustrating. And I wanted to make that point very clearly in the hopes that maybe this will change. I would love to believe in those values. I really would love to. And I'm sure that the public out there would also like to believe in those values. But I'm not convinced that the department lives up to its own values, given my own personal experience. Chair, I want to go to slide page 14, please. And the one query that I have there is, it says there that the number of targets is total of 43. And if you look under administration, it says the targets are 27, but you've only reported on 14 of them. Sorry, not 14, 17 of them. Because if you add them up, your report says achieved 24, not achieved 3. But if you count them up, you'll see that there's 14 that you've reported on which have been achieved, 3 that have not been achieved. Where are the other 10? There's no reports on that one. So you can actually count the words on those pages, achieved, not achieved, and you'll come to that figure. The civic services one is fine, that one is very clear. And immigration services, you reported there on 8 only, of which 6 have achieved, 2 have not achieved, and there's one that's missing somewhere there. The next question is on page 17. Now, I'd like you to unpack, DG, this arrangement to the Cuba-South African agreement. I got the point that you made earlier about security of information and the engagement with Treasury and why it's important that they secure the information. But I'm not sure it's a strong argument, because I'm sure there must be South African companies who can do the job, who can secure our information. Because the banks in South Africa are using local companies, and your money and my money is very safe there. I don't have to bring in a company from Cuba to have secure systems. So I'd like to understand and tell me why you think that it can't be done and why there can't be local companies who will do this yet. You in your own words, DG, when you argued why it was important for us to be able to protect the local citizens and make sure that they are first in line for jobs, when we had the conversation about visas and all of that. Now, I agree with you, but the same principle must apply for businesses, because it's businesses that create jobs. On page 23, Chairperson, I'll refer to 23 and 24 collectively. You say that the 60% of reported cases, and that reported cases have been investigated and finalized. Just two issues on that. You know, there was this report recently that was produced by the African Center for Migration and Lawyers for Human Rights. And that report was a report on corruption at the Marabasta offices, and it talked about the endemic corruption at almost every level of the asylum seeker permit process. And in that report, one of the things that they said was that the department places the burden of proof on the victims to actually prove that there is corruption. The impression that I got from that report is that we don't proactively go and seek out where the areas of risk are and make our own assessment. But I see on this, on page, on the next slide, in 24, you talk about the threats and risk assessments and all of that. So just referring to that one report, I'd just like to hear from you, how is it that the department did not pick this up before and this thing has been going on? Or was it picked up and was something being done about it while the report was being produced? But I mean, from what we've read in the media, I've read the report myself personally, it looks like the situation is out of control there as far as corruption is concerned. And I'd like to hear what exactly is going on to try and fix it, and whether or not your department is aware of it. This counter-corruption unit, we've got a unit to deal with it. Why couldn't they prevent this thing from happening, and that we respond only once the thing happens? And then it's joint 60% of reported cases investigated and finalized. What I'm trying to understand there is that I take it, and I'd like to hear your response on it, that 100% of the cases that we're aware of are investigated and being dealt with. This figure doesn't tell us that. It says 60% of reported cases investigated and finalized. I understand that you can't finalize all of the cases immediately, but just to get your response on whether every single case that's reported is investigated and the efforts that the department makes to try and go for prevention in this particular case. It does worry me about this thing of the smart IDs and the reduced numbers from 640,000. I mean, this is the one area that the department has been performing really well in terms of smart IDs. Although the queues are massive, we receive lots of complaints from people for the long hours that they have to spend in queues. That on its own is a problem, but it becomes an even greater problem now when I hear that you've got network problems. So if you can maybe just unpack exactly what is the problem with this network issue. And is there a separate network for the smart ID system and there's a separate network for the others, or is there one network? Because what I don't understand is that how is it you can't process smart IDs because of a network problem, but you've got a very high turnaround on the passports. You've got some 90-odd% on passports. So are you using separate networks for different passport applications and for IDs applications? Maybe if you can unpack that and just explain to us what exactly is the problem with the network. I know I wrote to Mr. Mabuso not long ago. We received a number of calls from people saying the systems are down and this has been a common problem. So I think the report is corroborating the experience and that we're having on the ground from people who call us constantly on this down network problem. On page 36, I jump ahead a few slides, Chair. I just want to get your... I'd like to understand why is it that it takes 90 days to produce a refugee ID and a refugee travel document, and yet it can take 13 days to do a South African ID and a South African passport, and a few days also for a South African ID. What makes it so complicated, and why does it take 3 months for a refugee ID to be issued? Chair, one of my greatest headaches is this issue of permanent residence. And the last time there was a report on this, I had a little bit of hope that things were getting better. I've now lost all of that hope when I hear there's only 7.9% of the permanent resident applications. So, DJ, I will be very grateful to hear from you. How long is it going to take to turn this situation around? There are hundreds of applications of people who are waiting for even a response. And is there any way that you could give applicants some indication of where they are in the sausage machine? Because I know it takes a lot of steps that needs to happen. But people become very impatient when they apply and they're waiting for 2 and 3 years and they're not hearing anything. Surely there must be a way for you to be able to give some sort of feedback to applicants through an SMS system or whatever, that your application is in step 2 out of 10 steps and something to that effect. There must be a way. I mean, you talked about innovation and your values. Surely you must come up with a plan on that. So if you don't do that, what happens is that you increase the number of queries, and then people will continuously send you emails and ask you, where are we on this thing? Please give us some feedback. Please give us some feedback. And I'm not sure that the department has the capacity to deal with all of those emails, because you'll send an email today, you must wait until next month sometimes to get a response. So perhaps maybe if you have some sort of innovation on how you can give feedback to people on these permanent residence permits, and if they know exactly where they are, it will be very, very helpful. On slide 40, Chairperson, if the DG will be kind enough to just tell us, you say 62% of business and critical skills visas. I'm very happy to hear that you're fast-tracking those visa applications first. But I just want to get an idea of what number we're talking about. You said 87.4% of critical skills and general work visas were finalized in the 8 weeks. If you don't have the exact figure, I will understand, but at least an estimate of the thing. Chair, I completely agree that with the comments on the Director General as far as the budget is concerned, I think we ask and we put a very high premium on the quality of service that we want from the department. My opening comments as far as response times and the professionalism of the department, all of those things can't be achieved if we don't have sufficient money to do that. And I would like to add my voice to that. And if we want to be able to turn around what I think is one of the most important departments in government, I think it must be given priority as far as budgetary allocation is concerned, because it's very clear. It does worry me, though, and although I'll give the department credit that they've managed to spend 100% of the budget, which is fabulous, there's no underspend and there's no overspend. But, you know, if I have to tell the man on the street out there that our department spent 100% of its money but achieved 70% of the work, I don't know how I'm going to be able to explain that. And in many cases, you don't reach the target because you spend all the money. It's like you build a house and then spend all the money, but there's four rooms missing. You're never going to be able to explain that to somebody. And I gather that if we had achieved 100% of the targets, then we'd probably been overspent. And that's the connection I make from that, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. The last point, Chair, is not too long ago we had a presentation from the department on a slide on the unabridged birth certificates, and one of the justifications that was used on that slide was there were 30,000 children that were being trafficked annually. I remember very clearly that slide. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend that meeting, but I asked my colleague James Foss to raise it. And when I did a little bit of work and looked into where is this 30,000 figure coming from, it turns out that there was this NGO who made that claim about 30,000 children being trafficked annually. And when she was pushed for an answer, she then said, well, actually, I was misquoted by the journalist. And this article appeared in the Praetorian News for the very first time in 2013. And ever since then, this figure of 30,000 children has been bandied about by the minister, by the department. I hear it all over. So clearly, somebody relied on a misquote. And the minister is using that as the justification for us to bring in unabridged birth certificate requirement. I get the argument about the security and all of that, and I don't disagree with that. But for me, the point is this, is that why are we using a figure that we don't have any evidence to justify to try and sell this thing about the unabridged birth certificates? It's wrong. And I'd really like to get an answer from the department. Was there any evidence or any studies conducted to tell you exactly how many children have been trafficked through South Africa? And there should not be a single one. I agree on that, and that's a separate issue. But the reply that I got from the minister was that there's only 23 cases since 2009. So it doesn't make sense to me that there's this official answer of 23, but the department says that there's 30,000 children. I'd really like to hear where is that evidence coming from. Chair, thank you. I've taken a lot of your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think the next one is Maxen.
No, Chair, we
just
don't want
to... Just a second, and then we must just locate the... We must just locate our discussions to the fourth quarter report, and... that's the last comment that the Honorable Hussein has raised, although it is very important, but it looks like it should be forming part of the first quarter report that we are awaiting. And as long as we just locate these little windows that we are dealing with this, and then probably some of the general points we can raise at the closure of the discussion, but at the moment for the scriber to be able to capture the fourth quarter report, and then we just need to assist them as well. And
no,
Honorable Raputo,
no, I was just saying that if a chairperson,
yeah,
time can be allocated, Honorable Hussein speaks too much. So
yeah.
Please, we want time.
He must leave time for us. I'm sure he has heard the cry.
No, Honorable Rafut, you can have the rest of the time. I have no problem. Okay, I just want to ask this one question, please, on the point that you made earlier about the report. I mean, are you suggesting that the department shouldn't respond to the last comment, but I'd really like to get an answer. I understand for the scribe that they don't have to record it, but it is related to the report.
Honorable Maxson?
Unfortunately, Chair, we are here to talk.
Yes.
And this is a committee meeting. We can talk until Carl comes home. So there's no issue of time here. I think most of the issues have been raised by Honorable Hussein. I'm covered. But otherwise, if he didn't raise them, I will have raised them because I share the very same sentiment on those issues. Just to start by also agreeing with him, to get hold of the department is quite a mountain to climb, including the PG. I think the department will improve on that one. But I don't want to paint all the officials of the department with the same brush, because here in Western Cape, the provincial manager is very helpful. You call him at any time, he will respond to you. But there is an issue that you also highlighted, Chair, when you were just talking about those issues, the issues of marriage from foreigners. I have written to the department because I have a specific case, and that woman from KZN, she has been married for more than 10 years, and there's no joy from department. I even wrote to you, Chair, because I didn't get any reply, no acknowledgement or whatsoever from the DG's office. I even wrote to you to say, can I please be clarified or be answered about this, because this is a case from a woman from the ground who wants to know about her status. She has never been married. She wants to get married now. She wants to be paid lobolo as all other African, but she can't because she's stuck. I tried to call DG several times. I don't know if I have a wrong number for the DG. I always get a voicemail. I even talked to AD to say, can you please help me to get hold of the DG, because this thing is very critical. You can't be a representative here, and you can't even able to help one case, just only one case. I'm not saying anything, but I'm saying I need an improvement on the communication on the side of the department. Slide number 7, Chair. The very same sentence. I just want to get a clarity on this thing of biometric, just to get an understanding, a deeper understanding. As much as I understand what the department is intending to do and of which I agree, but now it's not that it's a process that is very frustrating. For instance, in China, if you want to go and apply for a visa, now we are required to walk a long distance because only one embassy will provide those things. Are we not saying this thing is causing some frustration for people who want to come to South Africa? Just to get that clarity, because now I'm starting to have some frustration of myself as well. Also, to a second slide that talks about improve and streamline regulations. I want to link this one to my earlier point of frustration of traveling a long distance to get those visas or to get those things off biometric. And then now, are we not defeating the very same objective on the slide that talks about immigration policy and legislation that supports the importation of economic imported skills to the country if we are going to prevent people to come to South Africa? On the issue of network, Chair, I don't think the department can come and justify as they did here on this report. As I said earlier on, this department is one of the departments that is very close to the people. You know, when last week I was on Facebook, people were frustrated in Pinetown. There was a long, long, long queue. You thought maybe this is a queue to go to a patient grant. It was a queue to Home Affairs to apply for passport. I heard that the DG was also mentioning that one of the frustrations of the department is those things of network, but I don't think the department is putting more effort to sort this thing out. Because once the department, in terms of having those long queues in Department of Home Affairs, it talks direct to our own people. As people who are serving in this committee, you can't even have an answer. What can you say? I think you must get something. You talk about the we are leaking on farms. Also, this is a cause for concern. We are approaching local elections now. If we can't service those people on those farms, are we saying to them, they must just understand that maybe next year on local elections they are not going to participate? I think the department must do something in order to have those people. On page 19, training of 300 officials, of which I accept and I commend the department, but I think we need to do something. There is a case that I have an experience for myself. I went to the department here. As much as I'm saying the provincial manager is very of help, he's helping, you can call him at any time, he'll reply to you. But what I have experienced here, because the provincial manager will delegate, will give someone to help you. And I received a conflicting messages from the officials of the department. I wanted to change my surname. I don't want to be mixing anymore. I want to go back to Sophie. I'm divorced. Yes, I'm suffering. Maybe if the department will help me to facilitate that, I'll be sending you a shop. That's how I'll know, Chair. But now, a person, an official from the department who's helping me, she's telling me that I must follow a long process, of which I have followed. But when I engage one of the officials as well, he said, no, that is not the case. To change the surname does not have to produce those things that you are required to produce. You know, I didn't want to say, oh, this is conflicting, but I said, but what is happening? Why two officials from the same office, from the same department, does not have the same understanding? That is my worry. I think those trainings are more needed than before. On page 27, I can't accept this teaching. Imbizo, you have planned to have 10 in this quarter, but you managed to have one. And the justification, I don't think, is the justification. Imbizo is the way of getting to people to get their hope in the department. It's a very, 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 very important things that happens to our people on the ground, just to be called by the minister alone, because we know that our people on the ground are hopeless now, just to achieve 1 out of 10. And if you look at the justification, it's also not convincing. I think we must improve on that one, and I'm registering my concern. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and I just remember that one time I said that the website of the Department of Home Affairs is highly populated with information and processes, and the more we actually get closer to it, the more it's going to assist on some of the things. Honorable Kane.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may just... Chairperson, we made an agreement with Honorable Kenya, because I need to leave, that I can come in and then she will come in after me. With your permission, Chairperson. Chairperson... thank you, Chair. And I would really like to thank Mrs. Sophe for her input.
Yes.
Mrs. Sophe for her input. Chairperson, I would first like to state that the DG's information, which has been given here, brings forth a few issues which I would like to add on or probably query some of them. Firstly, I would like to state, Chairperson, that I hope by the end of the meeting, probably honorable members, through your leadership, Chairperson, we will come up with a method through which members can communicate with the department directly. I think we can come up with that with the DG's help, so that we see to it that, you know, there is that effective communication. I think that will address matters which came up earlier. I don't want to labor my input by stating that I did this and I did not find that. But secondly, I would like to thank the leadership in this province of Home Affairs. I remember some time back I needed some assistance, and myself and Mr. Matonsi, we gave some documentation to the main manager here at, I think it's Barak Park, and find that documentation. I think it's still lying in his office, but we managed to get other people lower than him to fast track the process. I'm saying it's lying in his office for a reason, because I never heard anything about it. But then I would like to thank the lower ranks, because they made sure that I got what I needed through another process which we had to implement with Mr. Matonsi. Thirdly, Chairperson, I've noted that the department has done very well when it comes to the training of new managers and the training of whatever. That is very good, Chairperson, because it shows us that the department is ready to implement the latest policies. That is actually good. But the problem is that on the implementation side, this is where we see the not achieved. Like, let's say, for instance, where you find that the national identity system is not achieved and whatever, and it is quite worrying. Even the offices, the 90 new appointed officials have been trained, an induction program has been done, 300 officials enrolled and trained. That is good. It means that we are ready to take the matter forward. But how do we take a matter forward where we find that we still have a problem when it comes to the actual implementation of the programs themselves? That is actually a problem, because, you know, at times you get this tendering or you get these funding issues, which are a problem. It means that we are ready on the one side, on the other side we are not. And one other matter which was raised by the DG, it was a matter of the number of staff in comparison, Home Affairs versus other ministries. That is a problem to us. And I noted as well when the DG was actually addressing the matters of, I think he termed them priorities going forward, where he actually stated that Home Affairs is a low historical funded directorate or department. That is quite true. We know about it from 1994 that it has been lowly funded. But now things have changed and we actually need more money. It's a pity, Chairperson, that the DG Nguzwelahle uthi niyayilungisa nina le ndaba nabo treasury low funding and all that. Cha, DG, do not shy away from it. You are here with the portfolio committee. Ask us to do something about it, because that is why you are here, to request us to do something. Don't say what you mean, like you are meeting with them, you are still talking with treasury. You may be talking with treasury, but you are here for a reason. You are here actually to enlist our assistance, so that we, through the interaction in the house, we can actually bring this matter forth. Because if you are saying, nina niyayilungisa, usho ukuthi nizoxoxelinga lekwane nje la, and then we do nothing about it, that's not how it works. You are here for a reason, and state it clearly where you would like the committee, especially with our priorities going forward. I write all of them. The other one is about $6, the other one is 5 coins. That is where you needed to say to the chairperson and ourselves, Pape, commit, well, and said, please assist us. And that is what we are here for. I would like to state now, Chairperson, going to these, firstly to the financial performance reports before I go to the priorities going forward. We're grateful to the CFO for the input. CFO, I noted your template. Very good template now. It's got underspending and overspending, which is very good. It doesn't have a savings. It means that you guys just worked in that system. And you know, some of us, we love discussions about money. And we know these little things. We know people that talk about money don't talk much, Chairperson, like you said. They just go over it quite quickly. But it would have been ideal, DG, even if you have the smallest of budgets, even if you have a minimal budget, that will show us some way where you have managed to come up with the savings, where you have actually outsmarted the cents and the rents and you have saved a few, a couple of thousands. This is quite good. It would be quite good to somebody who is, I think it's this page here, which is written budget versus actual, economic classification. If there was maybe something, you know, like you spend 100%, 100%, that is impressive. But not really that impressive. Because even with this 100%, I would have liked it to have said maybe you spent about 80% of your budget and you actually saved 20%. I would be happy. But I love this new format, under, over expenditure, savings, and then percentage spent. Thank you. And then we go to the last part. The priorities going forward. I think it's just about those six dots and then the five. I definitely agree with most of the issues that have been raised by the DG. I am also worried, and as a committee, like I said, DG, we will be looking into these matters over your the budget issues, over raising these issues even with Treasury, so that we do get a budget befitting this department, which addresses from birth until death type of programs. The staffing matter, where the DG made an example of the 10,000 versus a particular department that has many people, will also be addressing that. I think he spoke about the 10,000 versus the, another department. And lastly, Chairperson, on the priorities going forth on the very last page. Yes, on the very last page, priorities. That's why he has one up to five. This is where, again, DG, where I said, when you talk to us as people that have got to take the matter forward. The telecom issue, they said you have been negotiating and doing whatever, you are here to come now and say to us, we need your assistance, take this matter forward. The issue of full-time IT specialists, I was extremely disturbed when the DG said, I think Homa says there's about 60 people versus the Department of SARS, I think he said they've got about 10,000. 800. Now just think about it. So what you are saying to us is that listen to these members, Chairperson, do something about it. Including even this number three, which is the low historical funding, the one that I was talking about. We know about it, so we need to do something about it. Chairperson, I could go on and on and on, but I would just like to leave it at that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. And then, of course, just before you leave, and I think in many quarters we have tried to speak to the department that they shouldn't talk to savings. They should, it's either it's underspending or overspending, because a saving is actually a postponement of a service delivery if under any circumstances. It will mean that some service has not been delivered, or it has not been delivered to the right quality, hence the saving. So thank you very much for that. And the document, I must go back now. But I was not there in that agreement. But fine. Mekenye, can you proceed?
Thank you, Sebastian. I think most of my questions have been asked, but to add something in some of them. On page 11, and what about this PNA approval, which is listed as a progress? But I just want to know what led to the failure on meeting the target on the issue of this, on this bullet, I think it's bullet number 8. Also, still on the following bullet that talks to ports of entry, you say, DG, they were completed over the period, three were completed over the period of review. Now, I just want to check which are these ports of entries, because we have just been at Nakop, and what is that? Westbrook. So there are problems there. That's why I want just to know the names of those ports of entry. Because there were so many problems there, and there were shortfalls. For example, when you look at the at Nakop, there's a railway line that is there. That has got no, you don't understand what is going, what is happening, because if the railway line is on other side, the port of entry is on other side, what is happening to those immigrants that come from Namibia to South Africa? How do they go from the train? How do they go to the, from the railway line? How do they go to Nakop? So meaning that there's a gap there. So that's why I want to check when you're talking about the improvement. And also at, you know, the Hensburg, you know, to pronounce his name. There is a problem there where the officials are saying there is a fence, yes, you can see the fence from Botswana to South Africa. There is a fence there that has got, as much as we see that it's high up, but on the ground, it's on the sand. As a result, when the rain comes, the sand is washed away, and then there's a hole there for immigrants to just to pass there, so to creep under another storm. So to the improvement I'm talking about, that's why I'm concerned about the names of this port of entry that has been improved. On page 12, Honorable Martin has just said something about the access to farms, but I also wanted to say, to talk about the remote rural areas. As you say that you have no access to farms, do you also take note of the rural areas which are remote, which also have a problem to access to the Home Affairs? What is your strategy to curb this problem, noting that December 2015 is the deadline for legislation? That's why we are so concerned about this access to these areas. Also on page 12, 2, the challenge of moving fast to replace clean ideas. I think this is a very it's interesting, and it's a tone. When you look at the state of the establishing objectives, sub-regional targets, you talk of zero tolerance, as already Hussein has said, and ethical conduct, but there's a lot to be done here. We just want to check if you think you are really winning in this regard. I mean that committee for probing violence against foreign nationals at Durban, where there was a report that there were green ID books which were falling apart. Somebody was moving along with ID books, which were running about with ID books, false ID books with false names, but the faces are not, doesn't correlate with the face. So that means that there's a problem with these ID books. If really, we can this challenge to replace these ID books can be moved faster, because that's really a problem. And you say that you are having corruption. Now, I also share the same sentiment as Honorable Hussein has just said. If you can have a foreign national who is carrying so many ID green books which are false, giving them to somebody, because most of them are undocumented when we went there. So that is why they were given those false ID books, so that they can have a document of South Africa. So that led to them, all of them, being taken to a farm and kept there, because they've got no documents. That's like to go to one person, to a farmer who just kept them there. So I think really there's a need, and also I just want to know what else can be done. Do you think you are winning in that case? And so that's why I'm making this example. On the ID smart card, what may be the reason for it decline, your applications of ID smart card? What do you think they may be decline? Maybe it's the same issue I'm talking about, the accessibility. I don't know. Also, when will the refined immigration policy discussion paper be available for public comment, so that really even Parliament can discuss that paper, to catch some of these problems I'm getting. Honorable Ngoma is just talked to parents because I was also concerned about, you're talking about Telkom. What happened to the banks? Because once upon a time we told about that the banks are going bust. But now I don't see that. It's nothing that talks to the banks. You are just talking about Telkom. And also, don't you have any joint operations with other departments, noting that you really are having problems in some issues, especially on the SSPBs and what? Don't you have any joint operations with some other departments so that you fast-track some of the issues you are talking about, which we think they are critical and crucial? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, and Zadugmed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, let me congratulate the department for taking action, visible action against corruption. We have seen people at the head office getting arrested. We think you have taken the first step in a long journey, and we need to take action against people that are corrupt, because there is a lot of outcry out there that there is corruption. But now if government does not take any action, really people get disgruntled against the government. But the performance generally is good, but perhaps not good enough. The reasons I say so are, one, I believe that there is a space for improvement around control systems. Around control systems, because we find that under machinery and equipment, we have spent 99%, but quite a number of offices have dysfunctional computers, or if they exist at all, and I guess they need to be replaced, if not repaired, and I do not think that that would cost the 1% that we are having there. So perhaps if we would check up on the issue of control systems, so that perhaps the projections can be more accurate, and therefore we provide for computers and uniforms for inspectors. According to the performance, we are on track. But if you look at on the ground, particularly around uniforms, around computers, there is a significant problem. But now, the books don't reflect the problem, I guess, because the extent of the problem, I think, is much more than 1% of the machinery and equipment that we are having here. That is number one. And then we have recently got a qualified internal audit. I think we have a qualified CFO. And I guess we have an internal audit that is competent and which could fit then into the audit committee information that would lead to results, the desired results. Then the second area is around the issue of border management agency. I understand that the bill has been approved, and then we should be expecting it later in the year. But I do not see the implications of the change, or is it in the future, or perhaps we have we already started the finances around the implementation of this structure, the component of Home Affairs, particularly given the fact that it is going to be the leading department in as far as the BMA is concerned. The issue of the third issue is around operational management. Says the question is wrong. Thanks. The issue of operational management training, I think really there has to be an improvement in competency. I agree that Barrack Street is much better than the many offices that we have the state visited, and but I think the arrogance of perhaps like people not answering letters and responding badly to customers is around this thing, training. After people have trained and as competency increases, normally you find that arrogance levels are reduced, because insecure people really can respond in any way. And then the issue of the open bid, the concern about security, would also raise the concern about a single distinct a monopoly. How do you verify the figures that you might get from an institution that perhaps would be a distinct a monopoly? Or perhaps the suggestion is getting to Telkom around the bidding on computers. And then staff levels, and then the motivation around staff levels is around comparisons with other departments. I think we need here a more scientific distinct breakdown, so that we can also support this. We feel that, I think, as members of the committee, that the department is under budgeted. But now we cannot just come and say we compare other departments, because now it's equipment, it's people, it's resources and capacities that may cost differently in different departments. So besides the issue of numbers, or over and above the issue of numbers, perhaps I think we need to get a better breakdown, because really we see uniforms are short, accommodation in some places and so forth. We have a report from the Northern Cape. And then lastly, I think the issue of the portfolio communication, portfolio members, committee members communicating with the department. We've just got to develop a protocol for normal distinct communication, and then for emergencies, perhaps then have another type of communication. Not every case that is an emergency, but perhaps we could get a way of communicating. Normally, I communicate through the liaison officer of the minister. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, and I'm sure I'll stick to that one just after the last one, the comment.
DG, thank you for your presentation. I like in page 4 your DHA values. You know that arrows that are interconnected, and I think really they are so profound and very powerful. And why I'm also saying that, because of, especially with this unabridged death certificate and that, I happened yesterday, South African Airways 369, it was full of tourists with children. I waited there and I asked, I saw those little children from China, tourists from China with their kids. The plane was full, and I asked, and are you having an unabridged birth certificate and all? They had them. So I even ask, do you think these regulations, are they good for South Africans? What we have implemented, they say that they are excellent. And I really wanted to take a video to bring it in this portfolio committee. That thing is really working because I was there, SA369, full of tourists from China with their kids. I thank you. Gigi, with that, on page 17, Cuba South African Initiative on National Identity. We know that South Africa and Cuba, they've got a relationship, and I think really, you know, as benchmarking or learning, we are going to learn from the Cubans on the issues of, speeding up that kind of initiative. And also on page 27, the public imbuzo, seeing that we are not doing very well in that. You know, we can also be very innovative on the video conferencing. You know, we can take even, you know, that kind of campaigns so that we can be able to, to perform, do the video conferencing, and we can see that really we are also being innovative in that regard because we are not doing very well in that regard. And besides that, on the issue of corruption, you must emphasize on that. And I'm very happy that you managed to really to conduct training, you know, so that our public servants, they should be patriotic, and we must really hammer this issue of ethical conduct and zero tolerance to crime. But however, despite of this, despite of the what you have projected here, you know, during the recess, through the chairperson's delegation, he said that we must go and visit one of our one of the Home Affairs offices. It happened that I visited the Hammersgrand office, and it's overworked, Gigi, because they also say this Mpumalanga and Limpopo. I think that must be also be addressed because the queues were really alarming. So, but however, you are doing an excellent job. I thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think what is a little bit important that we know the more or less the institutional arrangement is that we have got parliamentary liaison officers in the name of Samuel Mandiwan. And then we have got officers that are assisting the minister and the deputy minister. Then it's Andrew Gomes here. And then I think those officers are the most direct line if we have got anything that we need from the department and from the ministers. I think it's that will assist us. Because if all of us, as members of parliament, really we can find ourselves trying to phone Mkhize on the phone, and then you find that he's busy in a meeting, he's not going to help you because you can't see that he's in the meeting. The DG as well, I think most of his time, the DG should be in meetings of coordination. And the likelihood of finding his phone closed, I think it's more than 50%. but also as members of parliament, while we need to assist ordinary people on the ground, but we must just be wary not to turn ourselves as a new Office of Home Affairs, because that may frustrate us big time. You see, that there are certain cases that may need special attention that we need to assist and all that, and then but otherwise the rest, you know, is the other services that they require, they just need to be redirected and then advised how to handle it within the Home Affairs offices. Otherwise, if we turn ourselves into some sort of I wouldn't know what word can one can use. To be like being on the front line, but being members of parliament, we may not get some joy, because like as I'm saying is that when you phone an official of Home Affairs and the other side is busy with some work on the table or some people in front of, the likelihood of not getting a proper answer is there, or unsatisfactory answer is there. And like as we agree at the moment that they have been given additional responsibility as a security department, but they have not been financed to expand their hands to be able to fulfill that, plus ordinary civic services that they have to do as well as immigration. Over and above that responsibility for security, it calls upon that they must put extra steps in each and every process that actually check on security and the rest. But the funding has not responded to that. It has not responded to that. And then you can expect that additional responsibilities will just create pressure to our officials. It is then important, that's why I raised the matter on ethical and professional, is that even those that they are working under pressure, that must not give them a permission or a certificate of being not caring, not responding. I mean, to write a letter that we acknowledge receipt of your document or a letter, your submission, and it has been forwarded to Officer XYZ, and then who will respond to you in due course. That kind of a letter is a very simple letter. And at least it tells the person that is making a query that my problem is being attended to, and it is attended by this particular office. So even if we are working under pressure, that kind of a letter needs to be made so that there is clarity where the query is, and not just this. But at the end of the day, like as I'm saying, is that we all, I think, as members of parliament, we have got one or two queries that looks to be very difficult, and then that needs assistance. But those queries that are ordinary, then Sam Mandiwana, who is here, and then can make a follow-up with the specific departmental officials, and then we can keep on speaking to him. What's the progress? What is there that has happened? And then I think it may assist us a little bit more. Can I allow them to just to respond, and then...
Yes. 30 seconds on this.
Okay.
Because I want to absolutely clarify it. I completely agree. I mean, the DG will tell you, I don't phone him.
Yeah.
I respect, I understand he's got a job to do. And neither of us will attempt to try and be a Home Affairs office. We don't have the capacity. Nobody comes to my office to apply for ID. But they'll come to my office if they apply for the ID and they can't get it. I've just shown Honorable Maxson now, 6 years somebody's waiting for an unabridged birth certificate.
Yeah, that must be something.
There are plenty of cases of unabridged and passport. So it's not a case of we're looking for extra work to do. It's a case of people have gone to Home Affairs office and they've exhausted every opportunity. Now they come to you to assist. That's what the issue is. And then we have no other choice but to elevate it. I must also say, in fairness, there are many officials who are very helpful. I mean, I did not make that point earlier. So it won't be fair to make the generalization and say all officials. So I must put that on record. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think that will assist as well. DG, at one time, you remember when we were talking about the strategic plans, your APPs, there was a talk about the one-stop border post. And then at the end of that discussion, and then it was still a battle of looking for land and blah, 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 and somewhere around Komatipoort. Yeah, in Komatipoort or something like that. And then there was a crisis of identifying land, and the municipality was involved in trying to do that. And then also the CFO, then if you could speak to the process, what sort of progress is being made. You remember that there was some sort of agreed modus operandi between yourselves and the Auditor General in terms of the media audit, you know, to actually assist you to move fast to defeat the issue of unacceptable audit outcomes. And then if you can speak to that, and the general maintenance of your mobile offices, especially, I'm sure all of us, we agreed sometimes that Northern Cape, the way it is so vast and sparse, then the mobile offices would be the crucial delivery agents in there, rather than the walk-in offices. And then, but then you've got this question of mobile offices that are dysfunctional. And also, of course, that needs upgrading to be able now to service on the smart ID that they did not have the programs or whatever, the systems that talks to the latest IT. And then, how are we going to handle these mobile offices? Because Northern Cape without mobile offices, then we can just give up, because people can't move in Northern Cape, no public transport for people to move from their residences to offices, nothing. And then it costs very high for them to move, just a mere 5 kilometers, then it's very difficult for them to move. And then the mobile offices then becomes key solution around there, while that provincial administration then is dealing with issues of public transport in there. Thanks. I think you can take us. You have until, I would have loved that 12 o'clock we should be dealing with the Northern Cape report at 12 o'clock. So, but that gives you almost 30 minutes. If you finish before 30 minutes, it's fine, but I just have the 30 minutes of responding. In any way, but like as you have indicated at the beginning, is that this very exercise, we're still going to have these questions and responses in no time, within a few weeks, on the annual report, the BRR report. I'm not saying that you must not respond. I'm just saying that we're still going to repeat this exercise holistically now over the 4 quarters. Thank you. You may take us on.
No, thanks for your chance, the honorable members, but I'm not sure what the questions were asked were too many.
Yes.
They were not asked on the basis that we're still going to come. So I'm not sure that the members will be happy now when we skip their questions, but we will try, Chair. Chair, let me start with your questions. When you said the issue of inspectorate, I think we have been saying ourselves that we need people who are ethical in terms of that. That's why Chairperson, we arrest them when they're not ethical. And that thing, we've done it in public and it's visible. And we've been saying, as a department on record, that we don't mind whether we'll empty Home Affairs if the officials are corrupt. No one is bad in Home Affairs in this regard. And we are working with the law enforcement agencies. In one of the interviews, which is when I deal with that report, when I was on right and recourse, we said there is a saying that people must have the fear of God. That's what we want to instill in our officials, if it's something which is existing, so that people must know that I can't do a wrong thing. I can't go and take people who are vulnerable. So we are happy that our officials, they get arrested, they don't know where the process started, they see when somebody just come in and arrest. They think that is going to work as a deterrent. So with the foreign revenue, as we said, we did submit what the scope has said. What was the recommendation was that Treasury must look at this matter. We wrote a letter to SCOPA to check with the chair. Even the minister wrote a letter to chair of SCOPA to say, this was your resolution. Now we want, we've been dealing with this thing. What is the progress from the SCOPA side? Because we agreed what we must do. We have done it as a department. So maybe what we'll do is share with the chair that correspondence to SCOPA. Chair, with regard to the PE, I think, Chair, the PE matter is still, if there was, remember we closed the PE, the matter was at a Supreme Constitutional Court. And then when it was in the Constitutional Court, there is a letter which the department has returned to the Chief Justice. So at this point, we want to say that matter is still sub judice until we get those processes finalized. So we'll brief the committee when it comes to an end. Chair, the issue of the marriage of convenience is what we are dealing with it and saying, you remember we changed the law, so we still not yet concluded a case in this regard. That's what we want to have, to say the law is clear. You get caught on a marriage of convenience, you will be arrested, and we'll take you through the court process, but the maximum sentence you can get is 15 years. That's what the law says. So it's the issue now which we need to deal with it. That's why, Chair, which will come back to that question, why you are saying the issue of permanent residence? Chair, we want to prioritize the permanent residence as far as people are adding value into our country. That one we want to deal with it. But I will give the figures when I deal with the Honorable Hussein's questions. But it's a matter which is a problem for us. Reception office in Libombo. Yes, Chair, you recall that in the last meeting we did indicate that this was not in our priorities for 2014-15 and either 15-16, if you remember the debate. So what we said, we are acquiring the land, which now we have received now the approval, and the municipality did rezone now that land out of agriculture to the one of the refugee reception center. And there was a condition that SANRAL must agree to build a road into the site where it is. So that's what we are waiting for. But what we are looking to do now in the 15-16, depending on that approval, we might have a temporary structure. Because remember, we said, once we've got the land is approved, it's then that we engage now the professional people to deal with the land. But the land now has been approved, is with us. So in the next meeting, we'll be able to report on that. Let me come now to the questions of the Honorable Hussein. Chairperson, I don't want to defend any official on the issue of not responding. But Chair, we do respond. This morning, I was called by 7:02. I was telling my colleagues, now at 5:50, because I was not in a meeting. I received that call, I responded to it, and now in the morning again, tomorrow morning, in the morning at 5:50, 7:02 will be calling me to deal how did we resolve that issue, because they called me and they found me. And even these officials, in fact, to Honorable Hussein, Mavuso will deal with it, the issues of what correspondence we have, what we receive. But it's something which we are saying, we are dealing with it in the department. But it's not that we do not respond. But this thing is very interesting. Somebody will call me now when I'm sitting here and said, DG, I can't find him. I called the whole day. Look now, I started in this meeting at 9. I will probably leave here at 1 o'clock. That's why my phone has got even a conversion. It says, when you call it, you don't find me. It says, leave your message. It's not everybody will be able to do so. Leave your message in English in order that it can convert into the message. I want to check with the Honorable Tosena. My number is 082, so I'm not sure that you have it right, 082-449-7525. Maybe send me a message and then it converts. But I can tell you, as I open this phone now, Chair, I get in a day. Remember, I'm dealing with 52 million people. So likely within a day, I'm able to get my calls up to 1,000. I think that I'm joking. It's a fact. Because my number is everywhere. It's not that is with me. It's in the offices everywhere. So anyone who goes to the office is not serviced. Look at the number of calls. Messages is the same. Email is worse. So what I'm saying, Chair, we don't want to defend anyone. We should be responding to each and every client in this country. But the possibilities might not be there to another one and get the other one. In fact, Chair, in our TPM last week, there was a survey which was done by a particular company which has come to us and say, let's do this, the survey, how the people are viewing the department. We've seen that. To say where people are complaining, what is the issue. That's why we'll be talking about a contact center, because currently we've got what we call a call center. What is the difference between a call center and a contact center? A call center is a messenger type of a thing. That you call, that person can't access any system, you must call someone at the back office and all that and forget. Now, what we'll be building now in the department in that regard is a contact center, which is a system which will be running on top of our processes. So by the time you call, that person is able to assist you. Like what SARS has, if you've got an issue, it's a tax issue. So that's what we're developing in the department in order for us to improve this issue of communication. So what I'm saying is something which we're taking a responsibility for it. Then now you, the second question was on the targets, and then I'm sure they will. I will let Mavuso to respond as well on that. Let's come to this issue of the Cuba. I think we have to say, I'm not saying there are no South African companies or wherever in the world, but it's something to us saying we're still discussing with Treasury to look at who we think will do something better for us with regard to us making sure that we've got a secured national population register. But that matter is not, as I'm saying, something which we're still dealing with, it, so it's not closed. Honorable Wilson asked me a question about that report. I was in Rice and Recourse on a Sunday dealing exactly with that report. We have read the report. And if you look at that report, the first thing which it deals with, it says, because you must see that the corruption that is happening, it, in fact, the report is even saying before a person even reach the port of entry, it says, because you are this asylum seeker, you get to a truck or whatever gives you a lift before you get to a border. Once they understand that, oh, you are an asylum seeker, he starts saying, the driver now, hey, pay me something so that I can facilitate you something once you get to the border. The corruption starts there. And then gets into the port of entry. Again, there's a corruption. We never hide it as a department. And then from there, moves, go to the refugee center. They said, at the refugee center, again, it's happening in two ways. Is that the queuing outside the refugee center, and then it is inside the refugee center. So it is not only in Home Affairs, because prior a person gets into the country, where is Home Affairs? Not there. But it's because if something is understood that these are the vulnerable people. And then they split it nicely and say, your 90% of corruption is on the queues. They said, that's where it is happening. Runners are there, and everybody. And then the collusion with people who are inside the refugee center, your interpreters, because these people are so vulnerable. The interpreter itself, they go and say, then he says, no, no, man, if you pay me 5,000, I will facilitate this thing to you. Maybe at that time it's not even the case. But that's a vulnerable, but yeah, what are we doing? Then as a department, we said, the only answer we have on that matter is to automate the processes, that's all. If you are still on paper, you will never close that. Let me make an example with the interpreters. If you go to a conference, there is no interpreter who is sitting next to you. You get that. In fact, let me not even go far away. Here in Parliament, when you get to interpretation services, they're not sitting with you like this. They are somewhere behind, and then they speak, then you get that. That's what we need in the refugee center, so that there is no interaction between the interpreter and the client. That's what we're looking at. The second one we're working on is an appointment system. To say, once we've got an appointment system, it will kill that 90% outside. And then we deal with it inside. So what I'm saying is that it's not that we're told by that spot only. It's something which we were implementing it. That's why when I was in that show, I said, we welcome these reports because they tell us, because what we want as a Home Affairs, we want to improve our processes on site with the reports. We look at it and we deal with it. So we are working with them. Actually, we are going to be meeting now again and say, this is what we are saying in the report. This is what we can do. Hence, as the minister was in Geneva, to even go and work on what can we do with the UNHCR. Because if we can have a collaboration at that level, then the people won't feel like so vulnerable they are. But we are also bringing amendments, Chair, to Parliament on the Refugee Amendment Act. I hope that we will be supported by this committee on what we wanted to change in order for us to be able to deal with this. One of the things which is in that amendment is already for public consumption. Is the one that says, what do you cross from Bay Bridge and you leave the Musina Refugee Center there, which has got only 300 people? You come to Marabastad, where there is 10,000 OPEs. So I want to say, go and be there so that we can service you better, close, and all that. But yeah, those amendments are coming so that we can deal with this. So we know about that. Well, yes, all the cases are being investigated. It's not only the ones which are, what we're saying, that 60% of them is a target to do it within the specified time, but to deal with all the cases. We cannot say, this one is not within 60%, let's drop it, so we're dealing with all of them. Let's come to this thing of a smart card. As you said, it's a threat. That's why we are saying, I'm going to come to that point now, which now the Honourable Member was saying, we must ask the committee to assist us. Our understanding was that every time we bring a report here, that's why we split it and say, this is what we achieved, this is what we have not achieved, what are the challenges? Our understanding was that the committee will, if there's a way they can deal with the matter, they will, but we don't come and say specifically want the committee, because we have said what they want the committee. Let's come to the networks. If the Barra Street is down, I've got into my car or in a taxi or whatever, I come to the office. Today, I was going to be serviced. So for a day, that office did not issue the card. And remember how we have counted the targets. I've said we know each computer per day must produce 28 cards. That is the norm. We have tested it. It does like that. So it means now to come with the 644 quarter four. I was basing it on the number of computers I have, number of days in a month, and then this is what I will do. So if now 15 days of those quarter, the systems were down, surely the number won't be achieved. Because if life is achieved, it means now our targets were wrong. So that's how you know, the networks affect. But with the Green Book, in the Green Book, you are filling a form. So when you are there, you fill the form, so next day you can deal with it. But a smart card, if the systems are down, you cannot apply. Because I must verify your system. And so that's why the networks are giving us this problem. Hence, we are putting in the report to say, we have approached the telecom. The minister, our minister has written a letter to the Minister of Telecommunication to say we want to move out of CETA. But we must understand that it's not going to be very easy because CETA is the agency established by government to deal with this. So it's got those problems. But we don't have a problem if the committee wants to go and meet with the Committee of Telecommunication or whatever. What I'm saying is that we can't say committee must do this. We cannot dictate and say what committee must do, but we are putting what is a challenge. As the Honorable Hussein said, we are honest. What we are getting on the ground is what we are telling you. It's exactly what is happening. But yet to resolve it, the only thing we can do is to go and beg that ministry to help us to do. Why now passport? The only difference between IDs and passports is the volumes. Because on the passport we've got, I mean, passport per annum are 600,000 per annum. But a smart card is about 2 million, all of them. So that's why the impact looks like it would be higher on a smart card than on a passport in terms of the percentage. Why the 90 days for refugees? I think I tried to explain and say there's a long process for a refugee. I cannot like, because remember, a South African is already have an unabridged birth certificate with the ID number, so you are already on the NPR. So when you come to apply as a South African, I already have your record, so it goes quicker because of that. And if now for smart cards, remember, smart card and the passport is a replacement, basically, because I already have my ID document, I'm just changing that, so it's easy for you to do that. And the passport as well, you have already have your birth certificate. If you are older, you already have your ID, so it's quicker. But the refugee one is where we have now to go and check all the systems within the immigration. So it is issued within civics, but the people applied and approved in the reception, the refugee reception processes. So that's why it takes longer. But even this process, we want to automate it. Only once the NIS has been interfaced with our NPR and the handles of the fingerprints, then you will go to any office and apply. But after those processes have been done, that's why again it is 90 days than the others, because of the process which it takes. Well, with the permanent residence, I will give you the figures. Currently, we are sitting with about 11,000 backlog on the permanent residence. Out of that, 3,600. We've got the files, so there's a team which is working on resolving that. But the other number, that's sitting in the system, we still have to go and verify now all those documents. But that is only what is a backlog. Remember now that in June 2014, we implemented VFS. So anyone now who's applying on the VFS one, we are managing that. We don't have a problem because it is in the new system. So we're working on this thing, and our target is that we wanted to complete. There's a task team which is working on it so that we can clean this thing. Like what happened on the temporary residence permit. You remember, we used to sit with a huge backlog on the temporary residence permit. We cleared that, and then that's why now we're at 84% because of the VF system which we have worked on it. And then now what number of the visas in slide 40. Yeah, so the gentleman can give the number. That's why I'm saying now that we're at about 87. If he has it, but I'm not sure they will have the actual number, except you know, the percentage which we have. This, let me come to this, to say comment on funds. You said 100%, but the 70% target achieved. So the budget is not all spent on the objectives. I'm not sure that I'm clear. Is that there are things which are routine. It's got nothing. Let me make an example. Paying your telephone. A telephone will pay the telephone. I pay the rent, whether I've got a target or no target. You have to pay the rent of those offices. So it means in your budget, you split on your operational budget and as well as on your target. So the budget which was earmarked for that is not there. But let me come to another point, as we're using an example of a house. The only problem which we understood, we only report on 100% achieved. So if I use the same analogy, you are building a house. In this instance, I only count for houses which are complete and people have got a key, they get in it. but I don't count a house where it has been built up to a roof level. So I did spend the money, but that house is only short with just windows and the painting, but I can't count for it. So before, we were wanting to count for what is complete, what is nearly complete, and then after that I can be able to report. But you know, the rule says you only report on what has been 100% achieved. Let me come now to the issues of. So yes, there is a percentage which we did not achieve. But as you said on another point, to say, but that money, that's why we do the shifting, because during the year now, once you see, you know, hey, I'm not going to achieve this, you don't lock that money then you come and say, you go and take it to another areas which are of a challenge. Chairperson, that's why I want to be not this issue of this unappreciated certificate. Chairperson, can you explain this? Chairperson, there, which Honorable said Nick was not in this committee then, the issue of the amendments to the Immigration Act started in 2009. In the previous committee. Then in 2011, August, the president assented that into law. Where was the 30,000 which was raised in May? Because we're in this committee in May 2015 for us to implement an unabridged certificate. So it can't be correct that the basis of changing the law was based on the 30,000, because it was in 2009. This committee approved those things in 2010. They go to the parliament, and then in 2011, it was assented to law by the president. Then what happens after that? Then we have to do the regulations. And people are making a mistake again. Let's correct that again today. That what has changed is a regulation. No, it's the law which first changed first. The regulations are supporting what is already in the law. You can't write regulations outside the law. Let me come to another point which is always missed. 2005, Social Development changed the Children's Act. I even know now that section. If you can go and read Children's Act of 2005, Section 18. It says, Chair, what, 2005 is not 2015. It said, one, for a child to get a passport must have a consent of both parents. Secondly, it said, when a child is going to travel outside the border, you must have a consent if one parent is not traveling. And then it will even go further and say, if that thing there is a problem, it must go and be resolved in a competent court. That is 2005. So when we're doing amendments in 2010, we're trying to make sure that we comply with the Children's Act of 2005. And when we ask Social Development, why did you do this? Again, people must go and get it. There is a constitutional court judgment of a Fraser case of constitutional court, where there was a challenge on this thing of children and the fathers and the mothers and all that. So Social Development has to do that in that respect. Then after that, we changed the law. In 2014, Chair, the people in the tourism industry or airliners, because other regulations were implemented in May 2014, they came to the department and say, because we want to go and create an awareness to the airliners and everybody else, can you postpone the implementation of the unabridged birth certificate? Then the first thing we agreed to October, and then October people still said, hey, they will take time to apply. Then we said, okay, we'll do it on the 1st of June 2015. Then we were called in these committees. I think it was in May, we were called by the portfolio committee to say, Home Affairs, come and brief us how ready you are now to implement on the 1st of June. We were not coming to the committee to do the law. Now the misinterpretation is like when we were here, we were convincing the committee using the 30,000 figure. We never. So what we were saying, Mr. Hussein, is exactly what you are saying, that people are saying this, and even in those meetings, which were in record, we still want to be in record even today, to us, one child trafficked is too many. So we are not caring about what 30,000, what 5,000, but what we want to correct, it must not say the department used the 30,000 to get the approval of the parliament on the regulations. They were approved long time ago. So, Chair, that's what I wanted to say with regard to this thing, to say the justice, we never used the 30,000 figure as a justification for the change of the law. So I hope that today I've tried to explain our position. Let me rush now to the...
There's just one part missing.
There is no 30,000.
Losing time on the time that we wanted to spend on the report.
Yeah, when we were left with
we're still gonna have him. I'm sure in the next few weeks on the
we'll come.
On the BRR. Yeah. He can't dodge that question, you can still repeat it.
Okay. Sir, we've taken time on that. Let's go quickly now on the understanding of the biometric at China. I'm gonna go now mention the ones which have already responded about communication. And biometric is simplifies that when people now have implemented this system, you're going to apply in person, and the reason for that, there's only one thing which uniquely identifies one person from the other, is the biometric. Today, it's there. We've got Mr. Creature, who is sitting in the jails, which was still dealing with his case. In his court record, was there in the media, he said, I had four fraudulent passports. It's him, it's not me. I came here as a visitor, and then after that I got this passport and that passport and all that. But I can tell you, had we taken the fingerprints and the photo of Mr. Creature when he was applying for a visa to us, whether he changed his name 10 times, he would be the same person to us. That's what we want to do it. The last one, we know the case, but the person must rest in peace. During those attacks, a person who was Sithole, who was killed at Alexandra, he was Sithole, but we know that he was not Sithole. He was from Mozambique. I think it was Mr. Maisman, that's what I said. What? I don't remember his surname. Yes. So those are the issues, you know, which we wanted to have people having to apply in person so that we can uniquely identify yourself. But what we're saying now, the minister is on record, that once we implement now the capability at our ports of entry, we might not require everybody to go and apply in person abroad, because we'll be able to take the fingerprint and a photo at a port of entry. That's what we're implementing. It was in the report which we presented here on our strategic plan for 2015-16 instead. So that's what we're doing. Streamline regulations, I think, Chairs, we said that time now might be against us, but we will explain in detail in the next meeting. Well, the issue that we're not putting more efforts on the network, Chair, I will even cry if I had a way to show that we are trying this, the letters, the meetings which we had with CETA to resolve this matter, because we know what it means into the department. And the issue of the farms, no, Chair, what we are talking about here, I think we must differentiate between the rural areas and the farms. The rural areas, there is nobody there who says you can't come in here. But the difficulty in the farms, the farmer says to these people, I'm not releasing you. For the whole week, they can't leave the farm. Even if you bring the truck, you put it there, the farmer still says, you live here, you have lost your job. But what did we do?
we've got signed a FLA agreement with AgriSA and to try and talk to them as a pro body to help us to assist on this. But that's what we've been talking about, and say if the portfolio committee can assist us on that, it's fine. We've got no problem, but now we've got the things to send it there, but the issue is that the farmers is what we're talking about, and say that's what we need to do. So people, we might be having some, we might not have, but we're pushing for people to get anything. Bezos, I want to correct that. Bezos, it's not that there were 10 and they were never done. It was 3 for the month, and it's only 1 which we have done. It's not all. The 10 is a target for the whole year. So when we come back, we'll give you the total number. Well, Honorable Nkomoge is left now, but I think the main issue to me was the one to say, when we put these things, we hope that the portfolio committee will assist us. BMA, Honorable Kenya, has been achieved. We don't say BMA has not been achieved. BMA has been achieved, and then now the bill has been parliament passed, has been gazetted. It is there now for public consumption. It's closing on the 5th of September, and then from there we're taking that to cabinet. So if cabinet approves, after that it comes to parliament. That has been achieved. I think this matter of ports of entry is not only at those ports. That's why we're saying the infrastructure in the border area is not there. There is no fence. That's why now the cabinet took the decision to establish a BMA so that it can deal with all this. The only ports we're talking about is Oshoek, Beitbridge, and Rietfontein. Then LRB, there's the LRB in Durban which is coming, which will invite, I think we've invited the chair. Yeah, we're inviting the portfolio committee on our LRB in Durban so that we can come up with a strategy how we're going to deal with this thing. So it's also coming. Smart card, we know about our problems on the green books as Chair has indicated. We know that's what we need to deal with it. I'm running now. I think the Honorable Gumet, all your issues, we are fine with them. And we'll deal with it. And even on this issue of staff levels, we're not only comparing with it, but we're just saying there is that. But we're doing a scientific process. And now to look at our, they call it tri-tie level of the structure, we're dealing with a business case, which want a scientific thing so that we can submit and say, we're not just saying we're not funded based on whatever, we want to be scientific. Yeah, and say it's not about emotions, it's what we really mean about it. Then Honorable Raput, I think is why we look at it at all what has been said. And maybe we have rushed now because of the time, but as you said, that will be coming back. I'm not sure, but yeah, maybe Tulan wanted just to add one on the document. Not sure, that was 7.
Yeah, I must get my voice in the CFO to talk to.
Yes.
One or two, three things that they were leveled in front of.
Yes. No, thanks, Chair. Just to indicate on the targets, if, for example, if you could go to slide 18, on the targets, I think there are certain performance indicators that have got two target clusters in them. For example, if you look at that one, the second one, the technical testing completed, which is the target on itself, and then e-permitting system piloted by MS. So those are two. But also, if you go through the communications one, in the way details, but I think we also clustered them. Go to page 19, to 19. On 19, again, there, if you look at that one on the 75 official trains, that it ends there, and then the end part of it is also a target. So there's two targets there in one. So I think there was we'll try and separate them in the next presentation to ensure that they're satisfied. The just one last point I just want to deal with. I think Honourable Hussein is correct. One way or the other, it is difficult as usual as the training to some instances, but we do respond to some of the, and I've got some of the evidence here. You know, for example, on the 17th of July, Honorable Descendant, you know, so I think there's been a lot of interactions which we respond instantly to some of the, what do you call that, that we talk about. The last point is on this of corruption. On the issue of the corruption at the refugee centers, you know, the infiltration of people in the queue, the things you are saying, is a problem. It's also a problem in our front offices. Because part of the problem is that people, when they are queuing in the public space. And therefore, Home Affairs has no control of that. If you go to a Randburg office, for example, in the morning when people are coming, they will be queuing outside the office. What happens to them during that particular period, the Department of Home Affairs cannot be in charge of that, even if they were inside the yard. Because Home Affairs offices or spaces are public spaces. So it is very difficult, unless obviously we declare our offices as national key points, where we'll be able to say, why are you, you know, we'll be able to have security that will interrogate people who are roaming around our offices for us to be able to take charge of that system. But currently, we are in the public space, and technically anybody has a right to get into that public space. So it is very difficult for us to deal with those issues of touters who actually infiltrate our people. But I think it's something that we're looking at.
Okay. Well, it is a funny situation that the runners, although that they are creating a lot of problems as well, but, you know, this consistent existence of them, that means there is some service that is given to people that can't see the forms, can't do anything, you know? Because otherwise they should have been removed long ago by our own clients. But it looks like they are giving some funny service to our client that sustains them to be there. But of course, the fraudulent part of it and the corrupt part of it, that's the problem. And linking to our internal officials. Let's hear the monies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to thank Honorable Member Kenya for her comments on the template. It's appreciated. In respect of our savings, and we actually aim to spend our full allocation in accordance with the strategic plan and the APP, and we'll reprioritize funding where it's necessary, Chair. So we're not trying to generate savings. We're trying to spend our allocation in accordance with our plans. I would also like to thank the committee, Chair, for your offer of assistance, which I perceive to be to help us get additional funding should that be necessary. So, Chair, thank you for that offer. In response to Honorable Gumede's question on computers and the uniforms, Chair, our budget is under pressure, and I would like to, if I say to you, we have sufficient funding to do a total tech refresh in the current financial year or even next year. We replace computers and our hardware as and when we can. We do not have a current plan in place to replace all our laptops, for instance, after 3 years. Some of our laptops are much older than 3 years, and frankly, they've become their past end of life. But if they still work, we still use them. I know, Chair, but the unfortunate matter is we can't replace our computers every 3 years. We simply do not have the money. Chair, then in response to your question on the engagement with the AG, we submitted our financial statements on time. We are informed that the audit outcome has improved and that we are out of disclaimer territory. Chair, but this is perhaps premature and we need to wait for a sign-off audit report, which we do not have yet. The AG was supposed to provide us with a sign-off audit report by the end of July. We don't have a sign-off audit report. The relationship with the AG, I would like to believe, has improved, but it's still a difficult relationship, Chair. We have unresolved issues, especially with the irregular expenditure of those 4 old cases going back to the 2013-14 financial year. That issue is still not resolved. We are engaging the AG on that issue, but until such time as we have clarity or finality on that issue, we will have challenges with the AG. On the revenue side, I would like to believe that we have made great strides, that local revenue is now under control, but our challenge still remains with foreign revenue and the DIRCO relationship. DJ has spoken briefly about that. If you want me to, I can elaborate much more on that, but perhaps given time constraints, we should leave it for now.
Well, all what we just need to really hear is that you are pursuing to actually get rid of that problem. Because that problem belongs to the dustbin. It has been identified, we know the causes of it, then we should be able to remove it. It's not that it's something that is in a dark corner somewhere else. It's already on top of the table, everybody is where, what are the problems, and then there shouldn't be any failure to actually get rid of that problem. Mkize, where are the banks that are supposed to assist us, as promised?
Honorable members.
And post office as well.
The banks we are quite on track. It was reported that we had the MOU signed with the Standard Bank as well as FNB. We have deployed equipment at the two pilot sites where we have currently doing what we call stress testing, producing some fuel cards, but only for those identified people as we work with them. Once we are done with that, the banks have identified certain number of branches that would like us to spread to. So also with NetBank, we signed the MOU. With APSA, there were just a few things we needed our legal services to conclude with APSA, but then also at an advanced stage of also just signing off that agreement. So the pilot is currently underway.
Just give us targets. What is targeted where? On the issue of the usage of banks.
The banks we will be using what we call the e-channel, which is currently also part of under development, Honorable Chair. But in terms of using it as a normal office, we have in Johannesburg as well as in Pretoria as well as in Rosebank, where currently are the sites where we are expanding. But currently the two sites running are in Johannesburg. But it's still a pilot. We don't want people to wake up and go to the banks tomorrow. We're just having a closed pilot process at this stage.
EFT payments or services, I think the minister said that he's moving towards the paying with EFTs rather than carrying cash. Is it something that the department is worried about, is working on it?
Yes, the cashless environment, Chair, has been implemented at Eden Vale. We've started there with Eden Vale offers. It's what we call a point of sale. The EFT is the one that will work with each channel because that one is electronic file transfer, which you pay while you are at home. The EFT, you use it as a point of sale in the office where you swipe. So that one, we have started with it at the Eden Vale office.
Okay. DG, you changed Mavuso from COO to DDG. Is it a mistake? What's the story?
No, Chair, there is. Well, in the department, we look at the way we are structured because when we're the chief operations officer, maybe put in organizations where operations can be at headquarters or whatever. But if you look at Home Affairs, there was a problem because your operations are at, you've got operations at Civics, you've got operations at Immigration, and then now when you say Chief Operations Officer, then now who is heading who? Then it was creating a problem for us. Then now what we were looking for was really a DDG, institutional planning and support, because now it's in the DG's office, and then deal with all this coordination, but operations are happening at the branches. Yes.
Okay, at least there is some clarity. Honorable members, I think we posed questions, we got responses. Many of the responses are very helpful, others are promising, and others are creating hope. And this exercise that we have, we're still going to have it in within 3-4 weeks in the form of the BRR. And you look like having something burning, Maxim. Can you put cold water on it?
No, Chair, I just want to put on record, I want to apologize to the DG to say that the number that I was calling is 078 number. It's not 082 number. So my apologies. I think Eddie misled me, gave me a wrong number. Yeah, just to fight with you, DG. But yeah, nevertheless, I wrote a letter to your office. I would like to get an acknowledgement of that letter because that matter that I raised, I think, is very serious.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. No. We'll give you some gloves with Eddie outside.
Yeah.
And then you can sort each other out, you know, and say, no one has got the right to create problems to another one. Honorable members, can we then thank the delegation from the department, and you must go and prepare yourself again, and then ensure that when we come and deal with the PRR, then we are sorted out. And I think also we are supposed to be meeting you on the 25th. On the 25th, and then I really don't know what's going to happen, because we invited quite a good number of people, and it looks like there is something that is emerging now. I think we'll speak tomorrow. We should be having clarity on what's supposed to happen next week. It looks like they've almost closed it for committee sections. And but I think we'll communicate with your office. But again, thank you and all the support. And honorable members, like as I've indicated before, we must utilize the PLOs. The PLOs, 100%, they must burn, they must run. They must burn, they must run. And then, so that we don't find ourselves with high stress levels, looking for Mr. Mkhize who's sitting in Northwest, maybe in a meeting with the phone closed. We must just make them run. And then, you see, it's Andre Gomez just disappeared now. Probably it's because maybe you are not making him run, not to actually get your issues to the minister and the deputy minister. And then I think it's our first port of entry. And then to utilize and also hold them to account for the responses time and again for whatever we want from the department. And thank you very much. And but you are not all released. Because we want to deal with Northern Cape report. And the Northern Cape report, of course, is the biggest issue, is uniform. And I heard the CFO talking about the monies, but remember that there are officials who last received a uniform in 2008. And it just doesn't make sense at all, completely. And so if we can have those that are much more appropriate, remaining and others released to go and do some more business for Home Affairs, then it's fine. Thank you. And Mkhize must not disappear, and the money manager must not disappear, as I'm lifted off. I hope Honorable Hussein is not disappearing, he's just making some consultation and back. No, thank you very much. You got him now. Honorable Maxson as well, he said you are not leaving. But I mean you are at the committee level. Okay, honorable members, I think we all received the report in front of us. And then it's just a standard way of putting the report in front of us. And then the report actually just captures what has happened without any manipulation. The only issues that actually dependent on our brains, it is only when it comes to the observations, which appears on page 10. On page 10. I think those are the things that we just need to look at, and then the issue that talks to the inspectors and the monthly rental that we had about it up into a large office. and of course is that the issue of public transport that was raised, then the issue relating to the smart IDs that could be accessed by anybody wherever they were placed, that we just raised that they must put much more protection to them, and the metal detector that was supposed to be put at the entrance that was lying in the office, I think so, and then I think it's the issue on the meetings, minutes of the meetings relating to the last, it's the last Wednesday of the month, as well as the meetings with the mobile offices, especially the matter that in Northern Cape those mobile offices are too key to service delivery. Then the issue, how do we monitor the content of those meetings and respond to the challenges that comes out there? And then I think that is what we're talking about, monitoring of meeting minutes, including on mobile offices, and whether they add value to home affairs. And then the issue of maintenance of the mobile offices also, I think, was creating a problem, because almost about 50% of the mobile offices were dysfunctional, satellite dishes not working, all that. And then that is just an observation that the mobile offices are key. And then the lack of port of entry. And ordinarily is that that lack of port of entry, it looks to be a big port of entry. But then the person that you have there that's heading that port of entry, who's also even responsible, I think, to coordinate with other stakeholders for the port to function properly, but looks like it's at a very low level. It's not commensurate with the responsibilities that are expected there. And there is something that needs to be looked at there. And then also the accommodation of the senior staff, it is a problem. And then also we picked up that there is something called ramp that has been contracted in there for cleaning, but you have your own cleaner there. Then the question is, what is your cleaner doing? And then I think we raised that particular matter. And then also that port of entry, because of its size, so there are possibilities of people to be held, to be locked, who does not comply with certain regulations, but there is no holding room, there is no boardroom where they can actually interview some of these people. And then of course is that because NACOP, it is just in the middle of nowhere. And then what, in terms of medication there, it is only the first aid boxes. But then you've got the staff accommodation there that almost creates a new village. No clinic, nothing. And then we picked up there that maybe there must be consideration of some sort of a mini clinic or mini medication supply, or you know, to actually deal with the people if they've got some illnesses that somebody can administer and hold the disease until the person can travel those many kilometers to town, because it's far from town. And if anybody is just bitten by a snake there, then you can as well forget about that person, because that person will never reach the nearest clinic still alive because of the long distances. I think other than that, it's municipal services, water, sewage, electricity, and NACOP, just to get some sort of certainty on their supply, and then of course that was raised by Honorable Kenya, the border control and the railway line there. There's a railway line that runs parallel the road, and then it goes from the country into Namibia, I think. Yes. And then there was some sort of a cry that there is no real serious supervision on that and control on what goes through that the railways on that line. Then you had a few referent, a port of entry. Of course, the issue of uniform is a general problem across. And then the officials that you have there for home affairs, I think they just did not have accommodation. And the one that has got accommodation there, it is at the pleasure of Sunparks, can be removed anytime, can find himself on the street. And then I think there was some sort of an agreement that was supposed to be signed to ensure that there is a certainty on the accommodation. But then the other official was staying some sort of 30 kilometers from the port, and there is no public transport in that area, which means that that person has to drive himself and all that. And of course, is that the report will talk to those unaligned official hours of the Sunparks and Home Affairs. And then the Hemsburg port of entry. Staff shortages is a problem. Inspectorate. Sometimes this staff, they have to inspect the person, and when one goes there to do inspectorate, and then there is nobody in the office. And then there are two, I think. And then when they have to go on leave, then they must rely on the Upington office or the province to get a relief person and all that. And then that is very problematic. And then Rietfontein, I think we did not go there, but we have seen that is an office made out of card boxes. Everything is cut boxes there. And but I've seen that you are prioritizing for infrastructure. And then it needs to be done as soon as possible. But the general problem that we have with others is the same there. And then you go to number five, where we have got the committee recommendations. Can I go through one by one? On citizen services, we are recommending that more proactive communication and engagement with communities around Upington is needed to encourage them to apply for and collect smart ID cards irrespective of month of birth. There was this thing that the smart ID, that people were going to receive some messages on their month of birth to go and apply and the rest. In Northern Cape, it looks like this has been relaxed. Anybody can go and apply as long as they qualify to apply at any time. But unfortunately, it is that now this communication needs to be made in Northern Cape, clearly. And then to ensure that everybody is aware, and then the people staying in the town must go there and apply and get these things, because it's just walking distances. And then, of course, the lack of transport and long distances between service points requires that the province have more access to vehicles and mobile offices to provide services to communities. Because the people can't go to our offices because of lack of transport, and then the provincial department of Home Affairs then must consider actually getting these mobile offices on their wheels and on the tar to actually get to these people. And then 5.3 is better security measures needed for safeguarding all uncollected civic documents. That is at Upington office. Of course, then there is that metal detector that needs to be put up. And then, but the two persons that are employed as security guards, I can really say that they are sleeping. They are not functioning as security guards. I think they are functioning as security watchers, or just watchers. They just watch. They just watch. And I don't think that they are giving us the service required in that office. And we just need to make sure that the service provider is informed properly that when those people are deployed there as security, they must function as security. There must not even be something that can tell to a wrongdoer that I can do something in here. They must be vigilant and so that that security is really ensured there. And then the of course the metal detector, that's 5-4 that we're talking to. And then the 5-5, the Department of Homeland should consider the significant need to address human resource constraints in the Northern Cape. Human resource. All the other areas, there is no inspectorate. Inspectorates are in Upington. And Upington, I think one port of entry is roughly 230 kilometers from there. Even if they can phone and say, no, we have got a person that must be, that we want to subject for inspectorate. 230 kilometers is this PLPs. No. And then they must just simply try and deal with the human resource issues. And at least this particular port of entry that is so many kilometers from Upington, there must be an inspector there. Because it will take a lot of time to transport an inspector from Upington to that point when that person is required. Otherwise, they must lock a person before even determining whether that person is not complying with our regulations. They must lock that person to wait for the inspector the next day. And it can't be correct. It can't be correct. And then civic and immigration officials should be provided with new uniforms as a matter of urgency. I think this one we have ventilated a lot on this. And then a method needs to be found to better specify the number of children in each province with passports that could need unabridged birth certificates in order to improve planning. Here, all what we are saying, I think, is that at the national level, we have got all numbers. But these numbers have not been broken down to provinces. So provinces are actually issuing unabridged birth certificates, but in darkness, they don't know the number that they are trying to deal with. They just don't know. So some officials, so with all the data that is there in that national level, we should be able to say in Northern Cape, children that are qualifying for unabridged birth certificates, there are so many. And then those that they've already issued are so many. Then what is left, it is so many. Then at least now they will be having something to strive for. Then a more efficient method for keeping mobile offices fully functional is needed in Northern Cape. I think that one is self-explanatory. And then the provincial manager was also functioning as an acting district manager. And that is very problematic for accounting. It is just problematic. And then that's what we are just calling upon. That is, we must just review that that situation. On immigration, then we appreciated the inspectorate, but there is still a need for additional, especially in Northern Cape. It's unlike in Johannesburg, where you know you can move an inspector from Pretoria to Johannesburg or to Marabastad or what. But not in Northern Cape. Northern Cape is just problems. They are far, those places of work. And the security and passport control of the railway line crossing international border, we have already raised that. The memorandum of understanding between DHA and SANParks concerning residential accommodation, as we are referring, we have raised that. the operating hours of Home Affairs need to be aligned with that of SANPARK. Yes, that has to be a referent, I think that we've already raised. Then provision needs to be made for boardrooms, holding rooms and storage spaces in the infrastructure plans of ports of entry. Of course, is that one critical now as you are speaking is at NACOP. Then Rietfontein port of entry infrastructure and accommodation is inadequate. Needs upgrading for permanent structures is fine. The rollout of EMCS to Hemsburg and other ports of entry needs to be prioritized, I think it's clear. The contracts of Home Affairs appointed cleaners need to be reevaluated at border posts where REM cleaning services are present. This one, all what you are saying is that you had cleaners. Now you've got REM, which is a service provider. Then you've got two choices. You move the cleaners to where they are required, where there is no REM. Or you reevaluate those people, retrain, and then give them the positions that are funded in that specific area. Because we understand that some of these persons are staying closer to that particular port of entry. Then to move that person now to another office where you need that the service of that person, it may be problematic because now you must provide accommodation and then you put that person in transport problems as well. Like as we say, that there is no public transport in Northern Cape. And then, but if that is the case, why don't we just retrain the person? I mean, unless if the person is untrainable, then they is seriously getting into the old age category. But all what you are saying, review their positions. Don't have a cleaner when you've got a service provider that is doing cleaning. And then empower that person if he's trainable. And then the more substantial medical provisions should be provided for isolated ports, such as NACO. Also then realistic targets. I think we were told, I think, that there were targets of locking up people. And then we just said that you can't give people targets of locking people up. Because if there are no people that are not complying, you've got nobody to lock up. The only thing is that maybe realistic targets like the number of inspections that are done, it's manageable and it's easy to hold. What the consequence of those inspections is something else. But at least is that your inspectors must have targets of going through the town, doing inspections at specific areas where they need to do those, and they must record those activities. But if they've locked people, it's fine, they must record. But you can't have a target that people must lock 20 people. Or 30 people. If there are nobody to lock up, then you are putting them in danger of just locking innocent people. Of course, we have talked about the re-evaluation of the manager at NACOP. We really believe that NACOP is a huge port of entry. Even commerce is going through there and all that. And really, you need a But we are not questioning the capacity of the manager there. She's very capable. The only problem is that she's at a lower level, which also limits her authority. That's the problem that we are raising. And then, of course, to improve the provision of accommodation for senior staff at NACO. All of them are treated as bachelors and spinsters. Yes, they are given accommodation for bachelors and spinsters. One room with a corner there, it's a little bit of a kitchen in there, and a TV somewhere else there, the corner, and that's it. All of them, the same. Even this particular manager. And then, for some reason, is that we must create conditions that is conducive to the senior staff to go there and be committed and motivated to work there, you see. And then devise an efficient deployment system of inspectorate to all ports of entry and small offices to deliver services. Currently, that they are based at Upington, and then they can only be deployed there. Is it the best way of doing it under those circumstances? We don't believe so. And then that we can station some so that they can close the gap where you've got a far lying areas, so that there is no such a long lead time of them to get to that particular area. And then the last one, I think that is general, is that we really just simply talking to the provincial administration, which is not your problem per se. We just hope that this recommendation will be facilitated to go to the provincial administration. While private sector is not geared up to provide public transport across the whole province, then the province has a responsibility to do something. Because that province has got many small little villages of 10, 15, 20 houses scattered right through. And it looks like it's very expensive for anybody to provide a taxi service. Because, I mean, the taxi will run for kilometers with three people or two people at any given time. And it may be very difficult for break even there. And that's why it looks like there are no public transport services across that province. I'm sure you only have them in town, moving from town to the suburbs around there. But across to other villages and like that, inter-regional and district, it looks like there is no public transport. All what we are saying is that if the provincial department can find a way of providing some public transport, that will relieve home affairs to a certain extent on the mobile units, that people can now get into a bus. Even if the bus leaves Nakop 5 o'clock in the morning to Upington and it reaches at 1 o'clock and come back the next day. But as long as people know that there is a bus that moves from here to there, then they will plan their things, how they actually utilize it, and go and get services wherever they are. And we believe that if the provincial administration can attempt to deal with this, it should relieve home affairs quite a lot, especially on the mobile vehicles that you have to replace tires, you must take to service and all that, and all the other funny things. I think those are the recommendations that we have. Can I hear from yourselves, honorable members, what are your views? I can say that this report, I sent it to the chair of chairs, just simply, not for change of content, just for quality assessment of the report, and then the chair of chairs is happy. Are we all right? Anybody that moves for this adoption? You can't keep quiet, because I've been with you in Northern Cape, I've been with you in this meeting. And the Honorable Gumede. Yeah, well, the department is going to, they're going to have this report when it has gone through the National Assembly. But, I mean, they can start picking up the things that require attention. Who supports that is Honorable Figland? No, not Figland. Figland. Figland, yes. No, thank you very much. We did not really expect the Honorable Hussein to say anything. I was actually on these four because they were there in the bush, so... So they were disappointing me. They were disappointing me by just keeping quiet.
I was afraid of Honorable Rafiki to use the call airtime, so I just keep it quiet.